Chicago. This is your new morning routine. Cap and J-Hood. Follow Cap J-Hood on Twitter and Instagram. Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago. Stream the show on the ESPN Chicago app on ESPN 1000. And now on FM at 100.3 HD2. Now, on Chicago's home for sports, David Kaplan and Jonathan Hood.
Good morning, everyone.
Woo! Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out, bring them out. Woo! Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out.
First morning in a while. It hasn't been absolutely frigid outside. It's nice to have 28 degrees here in the city on State Street inside the old National Bank studio. I'm Jeff Meller alongside Tyler Aki as we sit in for Cap and J-Hood this morning here on ESPN 1000. Tyler, hope you had a happy holiday season.
You as well. Nice to feel your fingers when you walk in today. I mean, like the last couple days, it's the frigidness where like you can feel the inside of your nose start to freeze a little bit when you're walking, and you can finally like get a little blood flowing now.
Yeah, that's well described.
Hey, phrasing.
I'm gonna throw that at you though because it definitely made me feel a little uncomfortable there for a moment when you said feel your fingers. Uh-huh. Obviously, you meant your own
fingers, right? Yeah,
not my fingers feeling you as we walked into the.
Although we did walk in together.
We did. Yes. That's why I wanted
but
to
not
make
hand
it clear.
In hand, yeah.
It was definitely it was nice to not be shivering and just kind of with that sole focus to get into the doors, because there's nothing worse than having to make that trudge to wherever you're going in the cold weather. Just, like I said, single focused. Yeah. All right, just need to get into the door because it's been so brutally cold over the last few days. It has been, though, or looks at least for the rest of the week to be unseasonably warm. So
I know, yeah.
That's going to be nice to take in.
We're looking at, like, what, a 70-degree change almost?
I think it's actually going to, like, could be 80.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll have to. I guess it depends on where it settles in, but we could be looking at a different
temperature. Maybe Tracy's listening. Maybe Tracy Butler's listening, and she'll let us know.
But obviously, we do like to start with the old sports-a-roo as well, as they say. And if you missed it last night, how about the performance that Luka Doncic put on? He did an NBA first, posting a historic 60 points, 21 rebounds, and 10 assists. Only player to ever do that. Here's a little recap in case you missed it last night.
And here's Luka, three-point over Julius Randle. Yes, sir. Got a late clock situation now, 4 seconds. Luka on the dribble away from Grimes. Oh, the scoop to the hoop. Low turnover game tonight. Dallas is 5, New York 8. Layup, 41. They have the longest road winning streak of any team in the NBA this year, 6. And if they finish this off at 7, Luka giving 45 points in the game. Here is Luka giving the ball up to Hardaway. Luka with the rebound, puts it in, and it's a foul. With 15 seconds, he's got a chance for his 50th point of the game and a chance to make it a 3-point game.
It shocks me about this game.
And that drew rim. It's still loose. Luka got it back. First made field goal of overtime between the two teams. They're a combined 0-for-8 from the 4 and OT. There's the first made field goal of overtime to give Luka 58 points and the Mavericks a 5-point lead. 21 rebounds, 47 minutes played, and now 60 points for the first time in Mavericks history.
60 points, 21 boards, 10 assists, courtesy of Bally Sports Southwest there. And I think what might have gotten lost in the highlight, and just ridiculous, Tyler, as Meller and Aki fill in for Captain J. Hood today, the way that the Mavs and Luka was able to tie up the game.
Yeah.
They were trailing by 9 points with, I believe, 44 seconds to go. And it came down to the final couple seconds with Luka on the line, but needing 2 points to tie, and I think it was under 2 seconds, right? It was a 1.9 when he shot the field free throw, knowing he needed a miss. Then it caps it off, grabs the rebound after it.
I don't know how it lands in his hands.
That's
one of the most incredible parts.
And then he goes ahead and hits the jumper to tie it up and send it to OT. And that, of course, allows him to go ahead and put in the extra couple points to hit the 60-point mark. Just ridiculous. We've always known that Luka Doncic was good, but that performance last night was unbelievable.
I have an insane stat if
yes,
I can read it.
Absolutely. Jake Cantu, who also, by the way, put together that fabulous montage.
And is a Mavericks fan,
yeah,
by the way.
I was hyped
just,
for that.
I believe you just got back from Dallas, right?
Yes, I did. But this is insane right now. NBA teams were 0-13,884 in the last 20 seasons when trailing by at least 9 with 35 or fewer seconds remaining. And the Mavs pulled off a miracle last night.
I think, like, you just look at the raw stat line, too. Forget the 60 points. Like, the 60 points is incredible,
sure.
Right?
Yep.
21 rebounds and 10 assists. Like, how often do you see a guy who, what's Luka, like 6'7", 6'8", get 21 rebounds?
Yeah.
Like, you don't see a lot of 20-rebound games in the NBA anymore.
No, you don't. No, that's a good point. It's not like it's definitely not the 80s where you had someone like Kevin Willis crashing the glass and hitting 20 boards, you know, every couple of nights. No, you're right. Luka, to do what he does is insane. And it's not just him, too. When you look at Nikola Jokic, what he's doing in Denver, the stat lines that these two guys are putting out, you know, almost night after night is insane. And it's just, you wonder, though, watching the Mavs and Doncic do what he did last night, are they truly a contender for the championship when everything needs to go through him? What he did last night, as cool as it is to watch, and it's going to lead to some conversations we're going to have in regards to the Bulls and possible what-ifs in Chicago sports history, but is what he did last night, is that when you look at what he's surrounded by, because honestly, he lost his best player in Jalen Brunson to the Knicks. And you wonder, is part of the reason Jalen Brunson wanted to leave because Luka's so ball dominant, right? Like, Jalen is a point guard who likes to have the ball in his hands as well. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, a fairly competent player, and he's shown it in New York. Bulls fans have seen it here the last couple, you know, it seems like
what, three times in the last month or
exactly.
2 weeks?
So, and he's a local kid, so everyone knows. But Jalen Brunson bounced as soon as he had the chance to, you know. You wonder how much of playing with Luka had a role in that, too, because, you know, he's a hard guy to play with.
Right. I mean, think about when we see these super teams form, what's the genesis of a lot of it, right? It's the Olympics. Everyone talks about Team USA. Well, Luka doesn't play for Team USA, right?
Correct.
Nikola Jokic doesn't play for Team USA. So it's interesting to see who's going to want to play with Luka down the line now. Are you going to be able to, like, there's the whole rumor on Christmas Day of, oh, James Harden wants to go back to Houston all of a sudden. But, like, could he potentially lure his way to Dallas? And would Luka even want him there, too, is the other question. Because you're talking about two of the most, like, highest usage, not going to pass the ball. Even though Luka's a good passer.
Sure.
Two of the highest usage guys in the NBA in Luka and Harden. And would that be a compatible match? Like, who would be that compatible match with someone like Luka?
And it's interesting you bring up Harden because he's the only other player in NBA history who has a triple-double where he netted 60 points. Mm-hmm. So, but he obviously didn't have, he had 10 less rebounds than Luka had last night. So an absolutely extraordinary. I don't know who, as much fun as he is to watch for fans, you know, it took them, they went out of their way to get Christian Wood this past off season. Mm-hmm. And that's, how is that working out? I don't know. It seems like the Mavericks are exactly who they have been in Luka's time there. They're, you know, a little bit better than 500. They're probably somewhere in between the 4 and 6 seed, right? Probably just above the play-in mark in the West in all likelihood. And that's kind of where they're at. So as much fun as it was to watch. And the other thing I ask or think about, Tyler, is as I was watching last night, the highlights and the final fourth quarter when I hopped over to check it out, you know, is Luka capable of ascending to the level where LeBron James made, right? Like, are we watching the next guy to really own the league? And I think we all know he's got great talent. It's undeniable. But again, LeBron wasn't as ball dominant as Luka has been in his early stages of his career.
Right. And we've seen it at times, and it honestly was one of LeBron's biggest criticisms, too, was he would pass out of some of the big moments at the end of games and try to. And he had obviously more talented teammates than what Luka has on his roster right now. But he, I don't want to say shied away from the big moment necessarily, but he didn't always look for himself to be the guy that hit the clutch buzzer beater at the end of a game. He would look for a Dwayne Wade or a Chris Bosh, or when he was in Cleveland with Kyrie Irving, he would look for some of his other teammates in some of those big moments because he didn't necessarily need to be the guy that hit that shot. And honestly, he probably wasn't even the guy who was best suited to take some of those end of game shots as well. Everyone thinks of like the Ray Allen one too. Like it wasn't LeBron that hit that big shot against the Spurs in the finals. It was Ray Allen that hit that shot. So I look at Luka, he's always going to want to be that clutch guy. Like, I can't imagine the ball in anyone else's hands other than Luka Doncic's at the end of a game. And when I think about what Luka's done so far, can you win a championship in the NBA with Luka and then a bunch of above average role players? Can you do that? And I don't know if you can in the modern era of the NBA. It's proven real difficult, and you need multiple stars.
No, it's that's where you wonder. Okay, would you rather? How about this? You look at where the Bulls are at right now, right as they stand, and they've
more
been,
star power on that team than the Mavericks.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Obviously, well, I guess it depends on how much do you quantify the superstar.
The sum of the parts doesn't equal what Luka is in terms of stardom.
We're being loose here, right? Because you got DeRozan and LaVine. And the questions have obviously surrounded Zach LaVine and whether or not he is truly deserving of a max contract. Whereas Luka, you know that he is. But it was interesting, though, to watch that unfold and just to think, okay, are the Mavericks currently where they're at? And I mean, I think you would say undoubtedly in a better position right now than the Bulls. But is their path forward when everything has to work around Luka? Can they get to a championship level faster than the Bulls can?
Yeah.
I think it
relates to that quarterback conversation in the NFL, right? Like, can the Bears get to a championship level quicker than, let's say, Washington? Even though Washington's a better team this season right now, and they've got the surrounding pieces, or even look at the team that they're playing this week, in the Lions, right? The Lions have much better surrounding pieces than what the Bears have right now. But the Bears do have that quarterback, whereas the Lions, I'm sure it's a little bit more torn among their fan base if they do truly have that quarterback right now. The Dallas Mavericks have that mega superstar, that top five and probably top three talent in the league in Luka Doncic. But they don't have the surrounding pieces. Whereas the Bulls, they don't have that superstar on their team, but they've got some good players on their team. But we've seen so far with the Bulls this season, like, you'd rather be the team with the superstar because that superstar can single-handedly win you games, whereas we haven't seen the likes of LaVine and DeRozan win this team a lot of games this year on their own.
No matter how you feel about where they're going in terms of championship caliber teams, at least you have to say the championship caliber response from Luka Doncic after he was asked about his performance was excellent.
60 points, 20 boards, never happened, baby. How's it feel right now?
I'm tired as hell.
You can rest later. You're young.
I need a recovery beer.
I need a recovery beer from Luka Doncic there, the 23-year-old who goes for 60 points, 21 boards, and 10 assists. Never been done in NBA history. He's now created his own club, and you just need a recovery beer after that. You got to like that.
Yeah, and he got the flack last year in the playoffs, too, for having the pregame beer, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he just shows that, like, you can be built any sort of way these days in modern sports, and I think him and Jokic are kind of showing that, like, you can be built any different way, and you can still be an elite level athlete that can go out and put together a 60-point triple double, or in Jokic's case, a 40-point triple double, like twice in a week.
The fun part about watching both of those guys, and I think I think it's Yurko who coined, you know, Jokic like a block of cheese, right? He's out there. But between the two of them, it's interesting in 2022, almost 23 here, that their body type is still doing what they're doing.
Right.
It was much more acceptable, you know, in the previous century, in the 80s and 90s, when you would see guys do what these two guys are doing and being able to, you know, still in play at NBA at an elite level, but not necessarily be in shape. But when you're surrounded by these Greek Adonises all over the court, right?
Yeah.
And for Jokic and Doncic to do what they're doing, that's the insanity of it. Just kind of makes your head spin at times. 312-332-3776. Just thought we'd start there because obviously it was a historic performance. And that led Tyler to think about something in regards to the Bulls and Luka. We'll explore that coming up next.
Don't miss the conversation.
Cap and J-Hood.
Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Cap and Hoodie.
Bah, 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 bah.
And listen to Cap and J-Hood at home and in the office.
Now, back to more Cap and J-Hood on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Never happened, baby. How's it feel right now?
I'm tired as hell.
You can rest later. You're young.
I need a recovery beer.
Who doesn't love a recovery beer? Curious. We'll have to think about that. Feel free if you'd like to share with us your favorite activity to go ahead and have a recovery beer. What is always when you're after, you know, I think lots of projects around the house after you put in a hard day's work. The old, DIY, do-it-yourself activity oftentimes leads to a great recovery beer. Nothing more satisfying. Luka Doncic there, after his 60 points, 21 rebound, 10 assist efforts, giving you the breakdown of how he felt last night. Tired and needed a recovery beer. And what's interesting is it got Tyler's head going last night after watching that, thinking about how this relates to the Bulls.
Yeah, because I was thinking, and I've never really had this thought with Luka until last night. Maybe in the moment I had it a little bit, but, you know, the Bulls kind of had an inside track at getting into that top three that year in that draft. The 2018 draft, the Bulls started that season 3-20.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you start a season 3-20, you're in the conversation for the number one pick at that point. Then, after a 10-game losing streak, bled its way into the start of December.
Yep.
They go on a stretch where they win 10 of 12 and kind of work their way, not into relevancy, but maybe sort of out of the hunt for that number one pick. They go on another 7-game losing streak towards the end of the year, and they finish the season 27-55. That's the sixth worst record in the NBA.
Yes.
And the same record that the Sacramento Kings, who ended up picking second and made a little bit of a leap in the lottery that year, that was the same record as the Sacramento Kings. And there's six wins off of Phoenix, who had the number one pick and ultimately picked DeAndre Ayton.
Yes.
So it got me thinking, like, well, is Luka Doncic a what if in terms of what, like, could he have been a Bull, and could we be talking about the Bulls having that generational superstar?
Well, and it's even, coincidentally, there's even more of a chance because you mentioned they finished with the same record as the Kings. The Bulls actually won a coin flip against the Kings. Now, what that ended up doing, I'm reading back at NBC Sports Chicago, what that ended up doing, both the Bulls and Kings finished with those identical 27-55 records, meaning they both had a 5.3% chance of earning the number one pick. They also had identical odds to land the number two or number three pick. But after winning the coin flip, the specific combinations assigned to each team that needed to be handed out ended up going, you know, they gave the Bulls the sixth slot.
Right.
And the numerical combination that the Kings got was based on the seventh slot. To your point, the Kings end up moving up in the lottery, landing number two overall. The Kings had the opportunity, because DeAndre Ayton was selected first overall by the Suns in that draft, if the Kings wanted to, they could have selected Luka Doncic. Had the Chicago Bulls actually lost that coin flip to the Kings, it would have been their numerical combination that won the lottery, thus giving them the number two pick, thus the opportunity to have drafted Luka Doncic had they not won the coin flip.
And it got me thinking, like, there's a world out there that exists where, okay, you don't go on that stretch of winning 10 of 12, or maybe you win the coin flip or lose the coin flip, Sacramento, like you were saying there, and you end up with the number two overall pick, or you end up with the third overall pick, because he was still around in the third overall pick too.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you wind up in that situation there, and the ability to draft Luka Doncic instead. Oh boy, what a tailspin it puts you into. Not only do you draft Wendell Carter, but that turns into one of the pieces in the Vooch trade.
Yep.
And it just starts the spiral of events that has kind of put this Bulls franchise where it is right now. But I don't know, do you consider Luka to be a what if in Chicago sports? Because it's a little more complicated. It's
sure.
not like Patrick Mahomes, where
yes.
you literally passed on him. But it kind of makes me think now with what the Bulls are doing, hey, maybe you just kind of blow this thing up now, eat your losses the rest of the year, and find your way into that top four potentially, or at least set yourself up for a good chance to get into that top four. Keep your pick this year with a bunch of generational players, quote unquote, in this year's draft.
Yeah.
And like potential all-stars in this year's draft. And maybe you do find that next guy that is a superstar in this league.
Well, let's be honest. I haven't oftentimes thought of, as a what if scenario, mm-hmm. more than anything because I just had to lay it out, right? I actually had to refresh my memory as to how it played out, where the Bulls had the opportunity to actually select second overall mm-hmm. if they don't win that coin toss. So no, I don't think of Luka as a what if often, or, you know, it really, because the truth is, it's not like they ever had a real opportunity to select him. It does feel more like when you look back, okay, Ryan Pace had an opportunity to
right.
select Patrick Mahomes when he was drafting a quarterback and chose not to. That one obviously is much more clear-cut, a direct line you can see. Whereas Luka, we've got to go through these permutations of laying it out. Now, what's interesting, though, is if the Bulls land the second overall pick, you wonder, would John Paxson and Gar Forman
right.
at that time have selected Luka Doncic? I think it's certainly possible. I think mm-hmm. they may have been more enticed by that. There's lots of teams who had Luka as their number one player on their board. Now, it was hard to get away from DeAndre Ayton because of his size, but a lot of teams did really like Luka Doncic and believe he was the best player in that draft. So it's certainly possible if the Bulls do get the two pick in that draft that they would have selected him. Then it leads to the question, well, if the Bulls had Luka on their roster, how different are things? Because there's a very good chance John Paxson and Gar Forman are still running the Bulls.
Yeah.
Right? At that point, you have to believe that if they have that superstar who they were never able to land, there's certainly a possibility there where maybe, just maybe, they're still
right.
in charge.
And quite frankly, if they had landed Luka Doncic, like, there's probably good reason to still have them running the Bulls, because they found the superstar that this team needed to continue to get to where they want to go. And you pair that would have been that 2017-18 season was the first year of Zach LaVine with the Bulls, too. A pairing of Zach and Luka, like, who knows maybe how Zach's career goes, but some of these other picks that the Bulls may have made over the last couple of years, maybe would have benefited from playing around like a Luka Doncic. Like Kobe White, would his career be significantly different playing alongside Luka Doncic as opposed to playing alongside someone like Zach LaVine like he has the last couple of years?
I think Kobe White's a great player to identify as. He's
yeah.
somebody who seems like he would fit in well alongside Luka Doncic, mm-hmm. right? Where you have give him an opportunity, open space to shoot. And that's the one thing that's undeniable when Luka's out there. Certainly a more ball-dominant player like Jalen Brunson, who we touched upon, wants the ball in his hands, whereas Kobe White, you know, he can handle the ball, but the reality is he's definitely just much, much better as a spot-up shooter. So to have him on the floor with Luka, boy, that really does make you think, wow, where could his career be right now if he
yeah.
was playing alongside someone like Luka Doncic?
Right. It's a great, like, you're right. You have to go through a little bit of a mental gymnastics to get to this point. But like, you start a season 3-20, the conversation is all of a sudden, all right, who are we going to be drafting in June or July, rather? Who are we going to be looking at? Like, you start watching college basketball when the team's 3-20. And maybe in his case, you're watching the overseas. What do you play? Do you play for Real Madrid?
Yes.
I believe overseas.
In
you start
Spain,
watching that. Like, if the Bulls were 3-20, you're watching a lot of Victor Wembanyama and maybe
yeah.
some G League Ignite with Scoot Henderson right now.
So no, that's you bring up Victor Wembanyama, and I wonder, how are you feeling right now? Because there's been, you know, I know, hey, Charles Barkley said it directly to Waddle and Sylvie when he was on with them last, and then he also referenced it on TNT last week.
It's time to break up both of these teams.
Break them up.
Break them up.
Break them up. The Heat's still in the playoffs.
Oh, man. They're
seven players. No, they're not.
How are you going to break up the team?
They need two players.
Yeah.
Each team needs two more players.
Oh, yeah. LeBron and KD. These two teams are mediocre at best. I told my boy Waller and Sylvie last week, time to break up the Bulls.
Do you agree? Do you think the Bulls need to, quote-unquote, break it up?
Yes. Because you look at, this team is not a Lonzo Ball away from being this dominant team. Like, mm-hmm. Lonzo Ball is a good player, but at the end of the day, he's a starting role player for this team. He's going to play a role as a defensive guy and a spot-up three-point shooter. You're not getting some superstar back. This isn't like if KD went down or Giannis went down or Jason Tatum went down. You're talking about a point guard, a floor general, a traditional floor general who can also shoot the three and play defense for you. You're not talking about some star that's going to take you from where you're sitting right now, the 11th spot, and catapult you into the conversation for a top three seed in the East. That's not who Lonzo Ball is.
Yeah. My question, though, is, so if you're breaking it up, does that mean you're trading DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine before this trade deadline? Is that what, in
your
head?
It's definitely DeMar DeRozan. And I think if you're the Bulls, you're trying to find a way to somehow package Vooch into that DeMar DeRozan trade as well. I could see LaVine hanging around.
Because you've maxed him, filled around him.
You've maxed him out. And let's be honest, he's never been a winning player. So there's no guarantee that just because you keep LaVine, the wins are you're going to fall into a couple wins. Like, we've seen a lot of empty Zach LaVine games over the course of his career.
My only question is, if you trade DeMar DeRozan and Vooch, you know, you're not landing anything more than a late first-round pick, right, in all reality. Maybe if you're lucky, something in the early 20s. But
you may be working your way into getting your own pick. And I think that's the more significant part.
That is how much more do they need to lose, though, when other teams are already in the midst of a tank job, right? Because they have their pick no matter what, right? Like,
right.
The Bulls need to land in the top four to retain it. So that's the question, is, you know, right now you're 14-19, but you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, seven teams in front of you with worse records. You know, so
but, I mean, you've been whole pretty much this entire season. Sans Lonzo Ball, you've been whole this season. Whereas, okay, you start to shell off some of these pieces here, you could see the wheels fall off really quickly.
But are any of these other teams below you, though, going to jump you? Because you're still going to win games in the NBA just by a product of being an NBA team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you play enough games, and whereas these teams, you know, that are below you, they're not going to. Chances are most of them aren't going on some ridiculous run. It feels like, you know, teams like, I suppose, although after the other night, the Rockets would be one of those teams you thought is not going to put it on teams. The Bulls had something to say about that. I don't know. It just looks at like the Bulls are in a spot where they don't need, you know, I don't think subtracting DeMar and Vucic from your roster automatically propels you into a spot where you're falling below these teams and increasing your chances at lottery odds. And then if you do move off of them, though, quickly, what's your chance of landing in the top four? It's still less than 50%, you know?
Yeah, but I think if you're giving yourself a swing at it, like, you might, this is the draft to do it, it seems like, too.
Sure.
When you look at the guys at the top, it's worth taking that risk because, listen, if you fail this year, like, you're not going to find success this year in all likelihood with the way the season has started and with what's on the horizon as well. Like, do we even know if Lonzo Ball is going to come back this year? That's been one of the biggest mysteries in Chicago sports of the past, like, what, 5-10 years? Like,
with no clarity right now to speak of either.
Yeah. And we don't know where that thing's trending.
312-332-3776. He's Tyler Aki. I'm Jeff Miller in for Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.
Cap J Hood.
Follow on Instagram at Cap J Hood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Jeff Miller, Tyler Aki, in for Cap and J Hood today here on ESPN 1000, hanging out with you. Tyler, what did you think of the Bears' loss to the Bills on Saturday? Their eighth in a row, and weirdly enough, a game they lose 35-13, but led 10-6 at halftime.
Right.
What was your takeaway from the Bears' loss to the Bills on Saturday?
I feel like some of the double-digit losses the Bears have had this season don't really tell the full story of how competitive they were in some of those games. Like, I look at the Cowboy game. You were getting blitzed early on, but you turned it around at a certain point, and what was it? It was tied or within a one possession game at one point.
Yeah, they were definitely within one possession. They ended up losing 49-29. But remember, it was that weird play that Justin Fields fumbled on, right?
Mm-hmm.
That ended up kind of like pushing it out of hand. But to your point, yeah, they did make it a ball game, and we knew going into that game that was right after they had just beat the Patriots on Monday Night Football, mm-hmm. and really, you know, changed, I think, everybody's outlook for what Justin Fields was capable of. And then, you know, right after that, for the next few weeks, we saw him make, you know, some incredible plays, you know, because the Dolphins game was then right after the Cowboys game, where he had probably, you know, when you, I think, I don't know, the Dolphins game or the Patriots game, those are the two games that really stand out as to, like, wow, we have something here, right?
Yeah.
In a potential franchise quarterback. So you're right. I agree. They lost to the Bills by 22 points, but the fact that they were leading at halftime, to me, was a bit surprising.
Right, and obviously, I'm not going to take away a whole lot from that game just because of what the conditions were. It seemed like the game plan was certainly altered. I don't think there was a lot of calling for some of those quarterback runs that we have seen in the past this season that have led to a lot of offensive success for this team. But listen, like, despite the elements, you saw, I think this was actually a good Ryan Poles game when mm-hmm. you think about it. Kyler Gordon goes out and gets an interception. Bayless Jones made some nice plays. He had to play down the field.
Well, yes.
And
40-yard catch, which, sorry to interrupt, but his that was the play, the first play all season long where you saw why they drafted Bayless mm-hmm. Jones. His speed, and then Justin Fields, like, okay, it looked like, honestly, it looked like a play Justin Fields would throw at Ohio State.
Yes,
where
exactly.
He'd watch Garrett Wilson or he'd watch Chris Olave go up and go after. He'd put it in a spot and he'd watch his guy outrun the DB. That's exactly what Bayless Jones did for the first time all year, which was nice to see for once.
Yes, absolutely. And then he had a couple of nice plays on the special teams, too, with some returns as well. And then Jaquan Brisker went out and got a sack, too. And Jaquan Brisker has... I think this is more an indictment on the team itself, but he's your team leader right now with four sacks.
I know. No, that is a great
point. You never want to see out of a safety. But
Of course not, yeah. Unless your safety's setting records with close to double-digit sacks on blitzes, that is not going to be a recipe for success in the NFL. I think the more I've watched over the last few weeks, the more I've been encouraged by what they have in the secondary. And it feels like that's mm-hmm. a unit now. We all feel good about where Justin Fields is at. And he's somebody you can build around. That's been well documented, it feels like, at this point. We all know the shortcomings of the offense, but the more you watch, you look at Brisker, you look at Gordon, and then, you know, before the injury, of course, most people felt pretty good about Jalen Johnson. You know, it honestly, the only time I can ever remember saying a guy gave up, you know, what was it, 180 yards to AJ Brown. And it was still, you know, it was not through any fault of Jalen Johnson. A.J. Brown is just a playmaker. And so
Jalen Hurts, too, was just putting it in some impossible positions for Jalen Johnson to defend as well.
Dropping it in the bucket. Yeah, throwing dimes out there. No, there's no doubt about it. So you look at the secondary, and I'm with you. It feels like Ryan Poles has a lot of answers there. Now, Jack Sanborn has shown and established himself as somebody I think you can use as a starting caliber player in the league. You feel good about where he's at. Now, he may not be, you know, a blue chip player, an elite difference maker, but he's a player who is not, you know,
not a liability.
He's not taking home a huge portion of your salary cap mm-hmm. either. So he's a productive player you can help build your defense around. The problem is when you look at the front four on defense, I don't know if any of these guys is a starting caliber player in the NFL. You know, when Travis Gibson, you know, Justin Jones has had moments, right? Angelo Blackson, Dominique Robinson. But while we've had a few flashes here and there. Like, they have, I believe, 18 sacks as a team right now.
Yeah.
Robert Quinn had 18 and a half last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost impossible when you look at this front four. Like, the lack of playmakers right now is startling.
So a lot of people are talking about, okay, what's the biggest need on this team in free agency, the draft, what have you. And a lot of people say, oh, they need that number one caliber receiver. They need to bolster that offensive line. To me, it is unequivocally the defensive line. It is a mess. It is the worst unit on this team, and it's not even close. And it's because you're going to need to completely overhaul that line. Like, you've got a couple guys on there that I think can be backups on this team, but you do not have a starting defensive lineman on this team right now.
Yeah.
And listen, that's why the conversation with, oh, Jalen Carter or Will Anderson in the draft, I think you got to find a way to get one of those guys. And then the rest of the way, like, a lot of your free agency should be tooled at bolstering the defensive line too, because even if you can get an average pass rush, I think that will even further show how good you may have or what good you have in the secondary too, with Jalen Johnson and Kyler Gordon and Jaquan Brisker and Eddie Jackson when he's back. Like, those guys are having good seasons without any semblance of a pass rush right now, which I think if you were to grade it on a curve, you're looking at almost an A-plus here based on what level of pass rush they're getting and the fact that you have to cover these guys for 5 seconds, it seems like, every single down.
No, it's really interesting, because how do you grade a secondary when, yes, there's no players in the league, you know, can cover for 4, 5, 6 seconds
and
consistently.
And look at the receivers you've gone up against this year, too. I mean, you Diggs last week, you had the two-headed monster in Philly with Devontae Smith and
AJ
Brown. You've gone up against the Lions, the Cowboys, the Dolphins. Like, you've gone up against some really good receivers this year. Justin Jefferson, you get twice.
Of course. Amon-Ra St. Brown
and Jameson Williams, you're going to see for the first time. DJ Chark's quietly put together a nice season, too.
It really is interesting, because Amon-Ra St. Brown is, he's been a very productive player. I'm still trying to establish, you know, where he's at in the hierarchy of NFL receivers. You know, his frame
feels very Allen Robinson-like.
Interesting.
He's not a one, but he's a really good two.
Yeah,
when the Bears had him.
He's a really good possession receiver.
Yes.
You know, and so you have Amon-Ra St. Brown on your roster in the Lions. And the key, though, is that, like you just said, Jameson Williams, right? Like, he has been out almost the entire season. He just came back a couple weeks ago. He has one catch for one long touchdown. It was a broken play, though. He was wide open on the play. But he was the 12th overall pick last year. He went to Alabama. And I think about this, because it was a good wide receiving class for rookies, because you look at what Garrett Wilson has done with, for the most part, Zach Wilson throwing him the ball half the time, which we all have seen how big of a disaster that is. So Garrett Wilson has been, I think he's, anybody who's watched the league has recognized he is going to be amongst the, he's pushing his way into the conversation for top 15 wide receiver. And I think very soon, with a legit quarterback, he'll be top 10. Chris Olave, you know, in New Orleans, he hasn't had as good a season as Garrett Wilson in my mind, but he might have more production. He's a player who, and we all know, I think a lot of people wanted the Bears to go after Chris Olave, right? So they're familiar with what he's capable of. Jameson Williams is a guy who, if he was healthy, if he didn't have that torn ACL, a lot of people believe he would have been the top receiver taken in this past draft. So, and then you mentioned Devontae Smith. Like, I think we saw him again this past weekend as the Eagles were taking on the Cowboys. He explodes, right? And it just goes to show, around the league, there's so many talented wide receivers out there. The Bears need to start to get to work. And it's going to be an interesting offseason. I think we're all waiting, and this is where the conversation comes in too. Should the Bears, I don't think you can ask a player or a team players to tank in the NFL. Like, the way football is, it's just, the reality is, it's a very difficult ask.
Especially on this team, where there's so many guys that won't be around next year. They're playing for their next job. And maybe it will be with the Bears, but they're playing for their next job, whether it's with, like, the Jets or the Bengals or some team, they're looking to scoop them up in the offseason.
The path to tanking may be what we're seeing right now from the Bears when you put someone like Jalen Johnson on injured reserve, right? Last week before the game, and you say, you know what? he's dealing with some issues. Again, you have to wonder if the Bears were in the race or still had a chance to make the playoffs, would Jalen Johnson be on injured reserve right now? He might have missed last week's game no matter what, but he might be finding his way to get out onto the field if this team was truly a playoff caliber team.
Right. And because, like, how many times have we seen a guy go from practicing early in the week to questionable to the next day IR? Done for the year.
Yeah.
And I get it's two weeks, so maybe this is a 3-week injury or something, but to see him go on IR was interesting.
I don't think there was any real impetus to put him on injury reserve necessarily.
Yeah.
You could have waited it out to see if he was capable of making a comeback. 312-332-3776. How are you feeling about Ryan Poles and where the Bears are at right now with their roster as we break some of it down? They have the Lions on tap. It's interesting to look at the Lions and where they're at. Do you think they have a brighter future than the Bears right now, or do you think with Justin Fields, the Bears have a much brighter future than the Detroit Lions? 312-332-3776. Mel Arnacki in for Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.
Cap and Jay Hood. Jay Hood.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch us and join the chat. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on twitch.tv or the Twitch app.
In for Cap and Jay Hood this morning here on ESPN 1000, taking your phone calls at 312-332-3776, discussing the Bears and where they're currently at with their roster. Who are you a fan of? Who has kind of surprised you along the way here that you maybe didn't necessarily anticipate making an impact? And are the Bears currently in a better spot than the team they're going to be taking on this Sunday, the 7-8 Detroit Lions, who will be hosting the Bears at Ford Field? And the Bears bring an 8-game losing streak into this one, and Justin Fields. And as Tyler and I have been discussing, it may be some solutions in the secondary, but outside of that, a whole lot of holes. Whereas the Lions, you know, I think a lot of people, they came into the season kind of as the darlings of, you know, unbiased NFL observers because of what they did on Hard Knocks and Dan Campbell kind of making his name known. And they started out, though, you know, poor.
Right.
It did not. Their defense.
1-6?
Their defense was so bad. It was historically bad. They were scoring points. But, yeah, they were 1-6 at that point. And they have now gone on a nice little run where they've won 6 of their last 8. But I think most folks will tell you that loss to the Panthers on Sunday or Saturday was, you know, disappointing, right? Because they have a chance to go ahead and make the playoffs if they go ahead and take care of business. And they have opened the door for the Packers here because of that loss to the Panthers. So where do you think they are, though? When you look at Jared Goff, a quarterback who was, you know, jettisoned by his team and his, you know, they basically ate a bunch of money, the Rams did, in order to land Matthew Stafford and send Jared Goff away. But we're talking about some of the pieces the Lions have currently, and if you're an observer of this team, who do you think has a better future right now, the Lions or the Bears? That's the question we're asking folks right now. Let's try Daryl, who is in Homewood. Hey, Daryl, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, my man?
Hey, how's it going?
Well.
Hey, I was wondering about another former Ohio State receiver, Michael Thompson. I was wondering, can we throw him in the discussion with DeAndre Hopkins and Mike Evans?
Michael Thomas?
Yeah.
So, no, that's an interesting question. He has not been healthy for 3 years now.
3 years. That's not what, like, I would rather take a chance on someone like DeAndre Hopkins, or we talked about it a little bit yesterday with Albert Breer, Mike Evans type. I'd rather take a chance there. On a guy who's been healthier over the last couple of seasons. And even though there's the stuff out there like, oh, DeAndre Hopkins can't really run, well, he's still playing. Like,
yeah,
he had the suspension earlier this year, but he didn't miss time because of injury.
Yeah, like Michael Thomas, remember, he set NFL records for his first 4 seasons in the league in terms of number of receptions. He and it was like an astronomical total. He was on a pace where He had more catches in his first 4 years than I think all but a couple receivers had in their first five seasons ever. So he was doing some ridiculous things with Drew Brees and Sean Payton, you know, in running the show. Since then, though, that was 2019 when he set the NFL record with 149 catches in a single season. Since then, though, he has, you know, in 2020, he only played seven games, did not play at all in 2021, and then this year was only able to play in three games. So I don't know if Michael Thomas, I don't think you want to give up anything significant. Now, chances are that I would think the Saints will probably cut him loose, you know, so maybe you only need to extend money to him. And so that could be a spot, you know, as long as you don't have to break the bank, the Bears could be the perfect landing spot because the one thing we know they are is flush with cash, right, Tyler?
What about another name, too? Like the other name that's kind of in a Michael Thomas-ish camp, but it's Odell Beckham. Like, I think I'd rather roll the dice on Odell than I would Michael Thomas.
Interesting. Yeah, no, so you know, my only issue is that, you know, still waiting for him to come back from the ACL, right? And there was a lot of conversation about, you know, him being a difference maker down the stretch, and that obviously hasn't materialized. So I'm a little concerned about where he's at with his leg. But next season, that's absolutely another name that has played more recently, too, and less than a year ago was, you know, a key contributor for the Rams, helping them win the Super Bowl, you know. Without him in the first half, I don't think they win that game.
Yeah, he was on pace to be Super Bowl MVP.
Let's try Mike, who's in LaGrange, wants to weigh in on Bears and Lions. Mike, you're on ESPN 1000, Mellor and Aki in for Cap and Jay Hood.
Good morning, gentlemen. So looking at the Lions, I think they're about a year ahead of the Bears. You know, taking a quick look at their team, they got the offense figured out. Imagine if they kept DJ Hockenson. You know, look at their offensive line, where they got like four or five first-round draft picks. The problem is, obviously, as you alluded to, is the defense. They can't stop a grade school team. So I think, you know, in the offseason, you can spend some high draft picks on the defense, and then you get a couple free agents. And I think next year they will compete with the Vikings for the NFC North.
I mean, I think it's a fair point. You know, he brought up an interesting point there about TJ Hockenson.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was a rare win-win for both teams and a lose for the Bears, because I think in their division, Hockenson going to the Vikings, that's a very, very nice piece because Adam Thielen doesn't have the juice he once had. So Hockenson is a nice complimentary player to, you know, Justin Jefferson, the best receiver in the league, undeniably, I think, at this point. And so I think Hockenson, they've really been able to, if you look what he's done since he's gotten to Minnesota, especially as of late, since he's kind of gotten incorporated into the offense, he's really, you know, I think they've kind of unlocked some of his potential. And I don't think in Detroit, they really were of the mind of extending him on a big money deal going forward. And so I think it was a win-win because I think Minnesota will probably look to keep him, you know, and try and extend him. And I don't think the Lions saw a path, especially because the receivers we've talked about, I don't know if they had enough balls to go around for him.
Yeah, and not just that trade, but also remember the Jameson Williams trade was also within the division as well. That was the Vikings and the Lions swapping, too. So you could have seen a couple of win-win trades within the division.
Which only hurts the Bears. 312-332-3776 if you'd like to join the discussion. Up next, it's Shot or No Shot in 2 short minutes.